Morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with the subject of ancient and modern necromancy, alias mesmerism and hypnotism denounced. A real good topic. We are recording today from the Plainfield Christian Science Church, Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, in the United States of America. And we welcome you all. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll start with our morning prayer.
I'm reading from page 19 and 63 of Divinity Course in General Collectania, the Blue Book. All we have to do is one thing: keep the first commandment. Thou shalt have none other gods before beside me, infinite mind, and that is infinite love. There is no evil mind that sweeps away error. There is infinite mind good. Infinity is all. There is no other intelligence, life, or love. Now work out your problem from this standpoint. If we do not keep the first, we cannot keep the second. To love one another. If ye love not man, your brother, whom you have seen, how can you love God, whom you have not seen? You only love God as far as you love man. And then the Christian Scientist prayer, he says, there is no matter and no mortal mind. God is all in all. All is harmony, health, holiness. This is the prayer unceasing to be used on all occasions and at all times. It lays the axe at the root of unreality, materiality, that forbidden tree, and cuts it down. Preserve a sacred silence on the subject of prayer. May it be carried.
Beautiful. What page was that?
1963. Which one? The first one?
Well, you said it sounded like you said 1963. So what?
No, 19. And then the second one is on page 63.
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Thank you. All right. Our watching point, Karen.
Watching point number 245. Watch lest you fail to heed the admonition, quote, that thou doest do quickly, as the master said to Judas. If you pick up a live coal and drop it quickly enough, it will not burn your fingers. Thus recognize animal magnetism both for what it is and for what it is not. But do it so quickly that you do not dwell on it long enough to yield to the suggestion that you are fighting something. Realize that there is no reality in any claim of evil opposing God and his children. Know that no devilish power exists, which persistently prevents man from being interested in that which would free him from delusion and restore him to perfect freedom and harmony, which scientifically experienced is the kingdom of God, kingdom of heaven. In meeting the claim of animal magnetism, touch it only lightly and as quickly as possible, lest the contemplation of the apparent universality of this falsity cause you to build it up in your thought instead of tear it down. When skating over thin ice, skate as fast as possible so that you will not break through.
Thank you. All right, who would like to speak to that?
This is Michael.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
The touching animal magnetism lightly, something that was hard for me to learn in the beginning. I would give it way too much weight or not enough. And then it was, you know, would keep its thrall in belief. So learning that has been Very, very helpful.
Yeah, thank you. It's a little similar to what we talked about last week.
I was going to say that for many years, it seemed so scary to me, animal magnetism, and that's because I guess I thought it was real. And the analogy with the mathematics helped me a lot, because 2 and 2 is 5 isn't scary, and yet it can really screw you up in a math problem. So it's the same thing. It's, you know, it's a mistake, and it's wrong, and it never was real to begin with. That's been helpful to me.
Thank you. That's very good. Who else was trying to speak?
Also, this is Michael.
Okay, Michael.
Yeah. Hi. I was taught with the Lord's Prayer, like the if you look at the kind of the model, or I think it's also been referred to as the model prayer, where it says, "Give us our daily bread." That's the only real part where it's dealing with someone's personal kind of request. But the rest of the prayer is just establishing God, His supremacy, His authority, His power, and it ends on that. Also with the power and the authority of God, and give us our daily bread is the only real part where it gets into some other, and it's very brief, and then the rest is just all on God. And I think that was what was taught to us as far as how to address any issue, or that's the way ideally you're supposed to deal with this. So
right, the 10 affirmations to 1 denial. And of course, the spiritual interpretation of that is, give us grace for today, feed the famished affections. And I love where Mrs. Eddy turns that around, where you're not really asking for yourself. Well, you're asking for yourself, but only to give back to others, which is beautiful.
I think the idea of, you know, keeping in the kingdom of heaven, that is very helpful. In other words, you know, we are in the kingdom of heaven. I know it is probably, if you're starting, it's difficult, you know, to understand this. But eventually, I think that's what the understanding that is so helpful, to keep in the kingdom of heaven, so that when anything unlike God comes, you immediately know, no, not this world, right? Not the world that I live in, which is the kingdom of heaven, and drop it quickly. And
thank you.
That
yes.
is very, very helpful.
Yes, you don't want to take all that stuff into the Father's home. You can't.
No.
You can't. It'll. So.
Well, and the interesting thing about that is that young children feel that naturally.
Mm-hmm.
They naturally know right from wrong. They naturally don't know anything about death, can't even conceive of it.
Thank you.
And it's amazing how quickly they dismiss like a headache or something, whereas we probably go back on it.
Yes.
It's interesting.
Yeah, the purity of their thought. Mm-hmm. You don't have any of that baggage. Go ahead, Sari.
I think it's a childlike thought, and, you know, I walk with God along the way. It keeps coming to me sometimes when I get up in the middle of the night. And to just know that there's only one mind. So I have to have that relationship with that one mind and not try the dualism.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, that is humility.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Florence.
No, I think, and with that humility, you can heed the first commandment and just know that that's it. This is, I feel, what children do. It's like, okay, would God send you a headache? No. So why do you have it? You don't have it. You know, the simplicity of it, and yet very profound, I feel. Like, okay, this is... In God's kingdom, there is no such a thing. So, no, I won't even heed it.
Thank you.
Impressive.
Another thing I feel when we think about little children or children, they don't hold on to you did this or that. They just let it go. And that's what I mean about that childlike experience. Because if we don't hold on, then we are always perpetually one with God. That yes. is a humility.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, because you can't have all that anger or resentment or feeling of revenge or whatever in the kingdom of heaven. That is why you must become as a child in order to be in the kingdom of heaven, as the Christ tells us. All right. This was a very wonderful lesson, mainly on truth and honesty, but it certainly applies to the topic. So we'll begin with Shardell.
Good morning. Let's see. I went to Science and Health, number 8, page 449. You will then advance in proportion to your honesty and fidelity. Then I found the following on the website, and I'll just share some of it, the beginning and the end. Times of trial are testing times, for then falsity is urging its claims to the utmost.
Now, this is an article called Truth
yes.
is Formidable
in the
Sentinel 1918 by William McKenzie.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. McKenzie. And then it goes on. Whoever will know truth and its power must be honest. It is not enough to have a belief of being good, for it is among the personally good that the stealthy mesmerist works to produce division of opinion. The wolf in the night tries to scatter the flock that it may slay the sheep as they wander confused. So do the human enemies of man, as wolves in sheep's clothing. First try to divide and scatter, then they will, if they can, devour trust, confidence, goodwill, kindness, fellowship, because if the flock should remain united in love and obediently trust the shepherd's care, it would be safe. But against the truly honest man, the mesmerist and the spy work vainly. The honest man will not accept any inducement of theirs to separate himself from principle. For God is a, quote, a God of truth without iniquity. Just and right is he, end quote. The servant of the Antichrist anywhere is afraid of the honest man everywhere, because every such thinker menaces his power, which is based on deceit. Mrs. Eddy says, quote, only the action of truth and life and love can give harmony. Whatever teaches man to have other laws and to acknowledge other powers than the divine mind is Antichrist, end quote. Science and Health, page 169. The Christian Scientist is so named because he is pro-Christian. Let him then, in his honesty, rely upon truth and be certain that it is formidable against error and will prove victorious in all the earth.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a good description. And this is why, read the golden text, Jeremy, please.
Psalms. I have chosen the way of truth. Thy judgments have I laid before me.
Thank you. This is why this is so important, to choose the way of truth. You make a conscious decision. So that is a great protection when you are truthful. And when you're not, you are subject to all the slings and arrows of material thinking, mortal mind. And you will become delusional, depressed, confused, wandering in a wilderness. You will have lost your compass. And I remember when I first came here, and I was, you know, freshly out of college, and I was becoming confused. I'd been pretty much, not always, but raised in Christian Science and went to the Sunday school at least for a while. But with all this new things going on right now, bombarded with sexual morality and other things, things that went contrary to what I had learned as a child. And it was very confusing. And people who thought that sort of thing was right had quite an argument for it. And that still goes on, even to a greater degree now. So you must go back to your textbook and to the Bible. Study the chapter, certainly on marriage. It is not old-fashioned. It tells you chastity is the cement of civilization. It tells a lot of wise things that we must adhere to the best that we can, and not become confused and wander about. In a beautiful article, again, Carrie sent a whole slew of them again, it was about that golden text, "I've chosen the way of truth." This phrase reflects a deliberate decision to follow a path aligned with God's truth. In biblical context, the way of truth signifies a life lived according to God's commandments and teachings. The psalmist's choice echoes the call to choose life and obedience found in Deuteronomy 30, where Moses urges the Israelites to choose life by loving and obeying God. So you choose it and then you live it. You live according to the commandments. As Florence read, the first commandment, it's our safety. God doesn't do this as a form of punishment. It's a form of love and safety and peace and lack of confusion. And then, "I've set your ordinance before me." Setting God's ordinance before oneself implies a conscious effort to prioritize and adhere to God's laws and decrees. Conscious effort. It doesn't just come easily. You've got to make that conscious effort. You're going to obey the Ten Commandments. You are going to obey the Sermon on the Mount. And then this article is, I don't know, from Bible Hub. Anyway, and then the teaching points. Keeping God's laws and teachings at the forefront of our minds helps guide our decisions and actions. This involves regular study and meditation on the scripture. Truth is foundational to the Christian faith. Believers are called to live by God's truth, which provides clarity and direction in a world of confusion. The psalmist's commitment to God's ordinances challenges us to prioritize scripture in our daily lives, ensuring it shapes our worldview and actions. So important that we do this. Choose truth, the way of truth, and it will keep you out of the animal magnetism that seems to be all around us, this Adam dream. And you truly will stay in the Father's house. In Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy says, "Honesty is spiritual power. Dishonesty is human weakness, which forfeits divine help." This is a very big price to pay when you are dishonest. And believe me, it is so prevalent right now to tell lies. I mean, even we don't even know. All this AI stuff is out that we don't know how truthful it is or not. So again, we talked about some of this last week, but you rely on your spiritual sense to tell you what is true and not true. It will guide you aright. You will feel it. You will trust it and know God is speaking directly to you.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing that all this falsity is out there. It's really forcing us to do that.
Yes, thank you. It is. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
And then evasion of truth cripples integrity and cast thee down from the pinnacle. Another high price to pay. The evasion of truth, avoiding it. Or there's also, dishonesty by omission? You know, maybe
I don't. I
dislike intensely lying or cheating or any of that stuff. I mean, it just somewhere out of my gut, it comes up. I've never, even as a kid, I've never been able to lie.
Well, that's a good thing. And that's your spiritual sense. Yes. That's a good thing. And that's how we all should be. We should all have that inner sense. You do not want to do it. Danger, red flags. Don't go there. Stop it. No. You're going to enter in Adam dream. So that's a good thing. You were raised well, or you, that's your conscience, and we all have it. Yes. But if you override it, and override it, and override it, eventually the voice gets very faint, and pretty soon you're not on that path. You're off the path that God would have for you.
Well, it brings its own punishment, though. I mean, if you're lying, you got to remember what you said and all that.
Sure,
that's true. Yeah, and people get in a lot of trouble because they don't remember what they said or who they told what. Their story's different.
Right, right. From being little, I remember that. But it just never. Besides which, Dangy and Papa always held me responsible for everything that went wrong. So I was not wanting to pound any more onto myself.
Well, that's good training. I mean, it's good training when your parents don't allow it and teach you the biblical truths so you remain on that path. And so thank you. Now, Nancy, would you share what you sent this week?
Yes. These are excerpts from the article, The Impotence of Mesmerism, by Paul Stark Seeley. I couldn't copy everything I wanted, but it's really a very good article. I would recommend it. Christian Science provides a far better defense against mesmerism than the repetition of the multiplication table. Its sure defense is the realization of the scientific fact that God is the one everywhere present mind, that in God's kingdom, there is no mortal mind or its materially thinking puppets, some called mesmerists and some the mesmerized, to do its bidding. Every individual has God as his life, his mind, mortal mind with all its mesmeric suggestions, is an impotent liar, unknown, unheard, unfeared by God or any of his children. It can be and do nothing. Evil in all its modes and phases is mesmeric in nature. It would substitute in your thinking its false material concept of cause and effect. Mrs. Eddy writes, all mesmerism is of one of three kinds, namely the ignorant, the fraudulent, or the malicious workings of error or mortal mind.
And what was the first one? I didn't get that.
All first. Mesmerism is one of three kinds. Ignorant. Fraudulent. Okay. Yes, ignorant. Fraudulent.
Ignorance, fraudulent.
Or malicious workings.
Or malicious workings. Okay.
Of error. Yes, and that's in miscellaneous writings. The most important point to recognize is that all mesmerism operates as self-mesmerism. This means that no individual can come under the influence of any phase of mesmerism except with his own consent. He must believe that he is open to and can receive the mesmeric suggestion presented. Mrs. Eddy tells us again in miscellaneous writings, if the error which knocks at the door of your thought originated in another's mind, you are a free moral agent to reject or to accept this error. A mesmerist's only hope of controlling another is to gain the latter's consent to the erroneous suggestions presented to his thought. Since God is the only mind, he is the only power. He shares it with no other. He exercises it fearlessly uninterruptedly to constitute and govern his universe and man, to govern every instant the thoughts and the thought processes of you and me. In this thinking, there is no human will or evil-minded impulsion. It is the constant conscious expression of the mind that is God, untouched by any mesmeric influence. Period. The end. I'm sorry. A little crazy here. I just wanted to say, if you in the article, it does cover examples of the three types of mesmerism for anyone that's interested.
And it's on our website.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yes.
Good. Okay. All right. Well, you see how we say you don't have to fear malpractice. It's only if there's something within you, if it can find something within you, hate, fear, definitely, other things in you of mortal mind that it can seem to work. But if you're strong there and your thought is clear, it can't find you and it cannot do anything. So this is very important to know, because so many Christian Scientists that I've known of are scared to death of mental malpractice. There's nothing to fear when you're with God and you're knowing who and what you are as his image and likeness. And you don't have any of these, you know, you're not hating someone, as I said, or some other mortal mind picture. And if you are, then cleanse yourself of it. Examine your own thought. Cleanse yourself of it. And everything, you will be fine. It cannot find you or reach you. So yes, and I've heard of the two kinds of mesmerism, I guess, ignorant and malicious. The fraudulent, that's the lying kind, yes, that would deceive, and only your spiritual sense can keep you free of that. So as Jeremy said, we're being challenged maybe more than ever to develop. And that's a good thing. Always a good thing. Yes.
All things work together for good for them that love God.
So. Yes. And also in the responsive reading, it talks about the vain talkers and deceivers. And Candy, she found something unruly and vain talkers and deceivers. For there are many rebellious men who are empty talkers. And it says in parentheses, just windbags. And deceivers, especially those of the circumcision. Those Jews who insist that Gentile believers must be circumcised and keep the law in order to be saved. So,
I think they just go through a bunch of rituals and routines.
Yes, yes.
Instead of living it.
Thank you. And in an article, another article from Carrie on Control by Violet Kirsimer, it says about the vain talkers and deceivers are the thoughts of mortal mind, which is perpetually tempting us to lose control and give utterance to its belief of anger, fear, impatience, and so forth. When we learn to control these thoughts and allow truth to be voiced, then error is silenced. So you see, all that talk and carrying on, that's why they're listening to the news and everything, it wants you to get you to lose control of your thought. And go, whoo, I'm so mad, and why did he say that, and what's going on, and yada, yada, yada. And that's where we can't allow it. And that there again, that would be where the malpractice could reach you. Maybe it'll say something that you have a soft spot about to enrage you. So don't go there. That's where the article Moral Idiocy that has been talked about before is very important. It wants you to lure you out from the kingdom of heaven and get you all upset and lose control. And then you have to humble yourself and walk back to the Father's house.
And remember that for most of these television programs, news or whatever, the whole point of the program is to mesmerize you into buying the products of the advertisers that pay for the program.
Yes. Now, also in the Responsive reading is teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lusts, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present world. So I was going to have Linda speak to some things concerning ungodliness and worldly lusts. Yes.
Perfect. And then I also took from our lesson 2 Corinthians 10, for the weapons are of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. And my what I'm going to discuss today is a stronghold that needs to be torn down. It has been reported by many sources that around 60% of the U.S. population regularly consumes pornography, and it's all across every background, doesn't matter who they are. But this is also a worldwide problem. It is a $80 billion industry that we know of. There could be more. It is an invasion. It's not hard to come across, and it has been purposefully designed not only to lure, but to hold people in it. I liked what Mrs. Engledary just said. It's like you've lost control, and it's like you can't stop viewing it. I came across this because I am consistently following current events, especially those involving children. Although I was aware of the use and availability of pornography, I was not aware of the extent that has invaded our children's lives. This particular issue is on my radar because I have seen the negative effects of this use in my life over years since I was a child up through adulthood. It's very important that the church take an active role in confronting the use of this media and equipping people with the tools to find freedom from it and to help children, men, women, marriages, and our communities. Far from being innocent habit, pornography has become a pervasive source of false ideas about normal sexual behavior, and this has been reported from many sources, all not just religious. This is therapists, doctors, politicians, concerned people, people that have been affected by it, people who were in the industry and have come out of it, and people who were addicted to watching it, and those who were affected in their families because of the person using it. It's just it's being addressed from all levels. It seems to be growing so fast that it is hard to keep pace with stopping it. So this has come to really our watches and teaching our children how to protect themselves. And this is really everything that was talked about up to this point has been right on. You couldn't have better tools than what we get here. This is not about pointing fingers, and I'm not comparing sins, but this is to alert our need for prayers to neutralize this hold and its harmful effects on the world. The reach of this has seemed to become a red dragon, which means ripe for destruction, as Mary Baker Eddy says in Science and Health. It was once a limited, secluded adult activity, but has now become easily accessible to anyone with any device, including very young children, exposing them to graphic, unhealthy, degrading, and even violent images. And it's a very high percentage of this material is violent. And most of it is against women, but it's not alone, just women. And it's also presenting it to normalize this behavior. And you can look all this up. I've seen a lot, and it's probably a lot more than I haven't seen that I don't want to see it anymore, but you don't need to go very far to research this to find out the negative effects of this and the extents of it. So our call is to you for our prayers that will help free or prevent those of all ages in bondage to viewing this material. And also, this will help address the exploitation and trafficking and abuse of minors and adults that are involved in this industry. It also will help the people that are helping either stop the material from getting to kids, helping the kids become aware of it, helping the families, helping the people break free if they have this aggressive habit, because it is definitely designed to get people hooked. I do want to read some what I thought was very beautiful. I came across a site of a collection. It was mostly men who shared their response after breaking this habit and what it did for them. And it's very consistent. And then they said that they found when they stopped, they improved their mental, emotional states. They had better daily functioning, happier moods, more energy, mental clarity, focus and motivation, and productivity. And then there were four things that across the board they all found to be true. Abstinence is the solution to this pornography-related problem. And then they all agreed that sometimes abstinence seemed impossible, but abstinence is achievable with the right resources, and abstinence is rewarding if persisted with. And we know that as a fact. And then I do have a little prayer if you'd like me to end with something. Okay. One of our watchers has put together a prayer. I'm just going to read a little part of it. It was a watch done specifically for this in mind. And it starts with a line by Mary Farrakhan Eddy from one of her watches from WPA. It says, quote, "Children, you are the perfect thought of God," end quote. And then the person added, "pure and incorruptible. Divine love is all. No child can be separated from divine love, and no mortal thought has any power to affect their thinking. The only relationship is the right relationship, which is wholesome, pure, innocent, with gentle affection, because God is the only mind governing them. Therefore, all children are attracted only to that which is good. The carnal mind cannot cause confusion, influence, or mislead God's children by any hypnotic attraction. Love implants holy affections in their hearts. Right this minute, every idea is in its rightful place, clear-minded, incorruptible, satisfied, and content. And they know it." And then she ends with Science and Health, page 63, by Mary Baker Eddy, quote, "Man is the offspring of spirit. The beautiful, good, and pure constitute his ancestry, end quote.
Beautiful. Thank you, Linda.
Yes.
Well done. And you see, this is the Adam dream that would lure you out and get you in, confused, miserable, not thinking clearly. Remember, all of this is supporting a very, very, very corrupt industry.
Yes.
That is out for your money. There's no good thing to it. I used to think, you know, Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount saying not to even look on a woman with lust, you're not to do that. And I thought, well, that's
pluck your eye out.
Pluck your eye out, yes. But you see, this is what he's addressing. This is why Linda was talking about the abstinence. You one little look, look what happened to David and Bathsheba. One look, you get it in your head, and pretty soon you can't get out of it. It should be just like the woman earlier saying about lying. All the red flags should go off. Do not go there. And believe me, I have even had things pop up,
yes,
pictures and other things. Mm-hmm. I say, my gosh, where did this come from? It wants you, I'll take one more little click, and then pretty soon you're down the chute to shoots. Abstinence is the only thing. Walk away. Do not think about it. Look at it. It's wrong. It is totally wrong. And it will get you thoroughly confused, screwed up, a place you do not want to be. And you also, you will forfeit divine help if you go too far, because the next thing you end up doing is lying and hiding and all this kind of thing.
Shame,
a conscience, which guilty conscience, Mrs. Eddy says, is the worst thing in the world. All of those things come with it. So stay away from it. And Linda gave good advice, if anyone's involved in it, how to get out of it.
Yes. There's plenty of help.
Plenty of help, verboten. Yes. And watch your children, because what I read, especially the little boys, they can start at age 12.
Six.
Oh, my goodness.
And I only say that because we need to really get this on this.
We it's do. It's Satanism at its worst form. But again, it's unreal, untrue. God never said it. It's delusional. But if you get into it, you're going to seem to experience the dream. And no one needs to be experiencing that dream.
I like to see it as a storm. And we've handled storms. It's just a storm that's claiming it can come be destructive.
Thank you.
Harmful, you know.
Craig?
Oh, just that it's a claim of loss of free will.
That's good, yeah.
It tells a person they can't control their
thinking. Yes.
Yes, that's right. You choose truth, and every day you get up and know that that will be your choice. And Mrs. Eddy does say the attraction between men and women have to be handled every day. It's a strong attraction. So in the right way of it can be, you know, good, but this is bad. It ends marriages. It causes all kinds of tragedy. Yes. And Mrs. Eddy says, too, about committing adultery is no less important, the commandment, than thou shalt not kill. So she says it in her chapter, Marriage. And if you want to be a working Christian Scientist that's of value to this world, and if you want to have God with you, you cannot be doing this. You just can't. Your choice. The big one. All right. Thank you, Linda. I wanted to go a little, we could talk about this for hours, but
yes.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about the story of Abram and Sarah before we end. That was an interesting story. And you see, he lied, didn't he? Got into something he shouldn't have. And then there were some very good articles, again, that Carrie sent about this. And there was a covenant that Sarah was to be the one who was to have the child that was going to forward the one God, the good. And by doing all this, Abraham really got himself into a muddle that he didn't need to. And in one of the articles by F.E. Mason, who did a lot on Bible stories, says the story highlights Abram's spiritual journey from initially heeding God's call to leave his father's house, false belief in material existence, passing through Canaan and leaving behind the low false testimony of the material senses, until he advances to the plains above Canaan, where he builds an altar to God. That is, he sacrifices some of the false claims of error. God only can be seen by the pure in heart, so our vision is made pure by sacrifice. Abram travels higher up to a mountain near Bethel, builds an altar, and sacrifices more of his earthly desires, carrying him almost to the house of God. But a famine arises, and he is tempted. He goes from the pure atmosphere where the light of God shines down into the midnight darkness of Egypt, looking for sustaining food, which can only be found in the mountains of God's holiness. Famine suggests barrenness of spiritual thought, unconsciousness of God's presence, and fear sets in that he will be killed by Pharaoh because of his beautiful wife, who Pharaoh will want as a wife. So going down into Egypt separates him from his wedded relationship with God into a sister relationship. Self divorces him from truth. And after 2 years, Abram, Sarah, and Lot leave Egypt to return to Bethel, traveling over the same ground they had traversed before the famine. They finally reach the same place they had formerly occupied near Bethel and stop, feeling the ever-present care of omnipotence as he nears Bethel. Abram calls on God. So you see, he was confronted with fear, famine, and then he did something he shouldn't. He really, as they say, threw Sarah under the bus.
All out of fear of malpractice.
Yes. Yeah.
For sure somebody was going to think something about him.
Yes. Yes. Yep. Yep. So, and something interesting that Anne from England sent, she said it is said that both Sarah and Abram, one and the same letter was added to their names, the Hebrew letter H. This letter forms part of God's name. I think it said Yahweh. It means spirit. Yeah, thank you. It means spirit or breath of God. Thus, it is signified that God's spirit will form a greater part of their nature, and God will change their barrenness of the previous 99 years to great fruitfulness. And then Isaac was subsequently born. And then it's lovely that this week's lesson shows that mistakes, like lying, cannot hold us back once we recognize our godlike nature as part of us, indeed all of us, and amend our conduct accordingly. And that is certainly brought out in this lesson where, you know, when they got themselves right and together and everything was restored. So we can make mistakes, sometimes terrible mistakes, but it can all be changed when you're ready to change and do what you should and make the choice of truth. So, and I found something I just thought was kind of interesting about the beauty of Sarah. Oh my gosh, they just couldn't say enough about Sarah. Her hands were beautiful. Her nose was beautiful. Everything about that woman was beautiful. And not only that, she, as she grew older, she remained beautiful. So she certainly must have had the spirit of God dwelling within her. And in this same article, it talks about the severe plagues. You know, those pharaohs, when they didn't do what they should, they really had a problem. So it said, the phrase highlights God's direct intervention in the affairs of Egypt, demonstrating his sovereignty and protective nature over his chosen people. And they had a really bad time with that plague. And so they had to drop it. They had to drop this interest in Sarah and give her back to Abraham. But what a story. And dear Sarah, what a thing to have happen. I mean, I can't imagine. So anyway, well, we are going to end today with a very interesting story that, again, Linda found about yellow fever and Mrs. Eddy.
And it goes. The deadliest enemy in the Spanish-American War in 1898 was yellow fever. Longfellow's soldiers in dreary hospitals of pain were some of the sick and hungry hearts calling out for help, and the Lady of Healing was helping them. The poet saw this lady with a lamp flit from room to room, but she was probably unseen by the soldiers she healed. These were some of the hundreds of healings never recorded and largely unrecognized. But one of the woman's disciples did recognize the work and demonstrations of her leader. Lyda Fitzpatrick wrote to Mrs. Eddy a letter which the leader had read at Christian Science Hall on Wednesday, September 14, 1898. Quote, "Beloved mother and teacher, I want to thank you, dear mother, for what to me has been a very great demonstration of truth during the time of the recent war, and finally, over the war. While I know that loyal scientists have been at work upon the thought, to me it was your demonstration. It has given me a greater sense of the power of truth and love than I could before comprehend. And I feel I can catch a glimpse of what the disciples saw after some of Jesus' great demonstrations. According to report, out of 400 yellow fever cases, every one recovered and were afterward placed at the front because they were better than before the illness. All cases which the physicians thought could not recover gained their normal condition right before them, much to the surprise of the physicians. The number of cases of so-called loss of life has been so small as to call for wonderment from all. In Science and Health, page 235, in your interpretation of the commandment, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me," it reads, "It ends wars." And the recent demonstration proves the truth of that statement. Again, allow me to thank you for the uplifting I have experienced, and also the great good the world has received through the great demonstration. With much love, your sincere student, Lyda W. Fitzpatrick, the Individual Christian Scientist, March 2002, number 3.
That was that series of articles or pamphlets by Doris Greckle, the Individual Christian Scientist. Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.